Welcome to Comic Culture on 93.3 CFMU McMaster Radio and podcast at comicbookdaily.com. I'm your co-host, Walter Duralia, joined by my illustrious co-host, Chris Owen, who is professor of comic history at Hamilton's Mohawk College.
Walter, how are you today?
Chris, I am doing better than ever. Yourself?
Better than ever. You know, I am doing great. It's Wednesday, our favorite day of the week. New comics are coming out. It's the sun is shining. It's a good day.
The sun is shining.
You know, what can I say?
No,
it's a good day.
It's good times.
Yeah, right. And I can tell the sun is shining even from the studio that we're in right now. Because you know what? Yeah, I can tell the sun is shining from your heart. And that's the main thing.
Okay, Chris, let's move on. Let's move on before I get really uncomfortable.
All choked up and everything?
Yes.
Yeah, right. Okay.
Chris, with the show, we're going to start with new releases that are hitting the comic book stands today.
Right.
And these are the stands at your local comic book store.
Right.
These are the stores that you should be heading into today.
The
to
local
check
ones.
These things out. The local ones.
Not the ones that are far away.
No. It's a lot easier to get to the local ones. Avengers, finally, Avengers number one hits the stands today from Marvel.
Yes.
You know, Brian Michael Bendis, the whole relaunch of Avengers, the whole relaunch of Heroic Age.
The Heroic Age, yes.
So, yes. This thing's going to be selling hotcakes.
Oh, it'll be huge. It'll be huge today. You know what? And I'm actually looking forward to this because it's nice to see the relaunch of the Avengers. The Avengers is such an amazing title. And I know we've had all kinds of different, you know, versions of the Avengers over the years with the new Avengers and the Dark Avengers and blah, 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 blah. But this is something that's I'm actually excited about. And I think it's a great point for fans to jump on.
Yeah, you know, if this works, I say they come up with another one, the Has-Been Avengers.
Absolutely. Well, you know, they did have the Great Lakes Avengers,
which is like the Has-Been.
It's kind of like Has-Beens. Yeah, okay. It was terrible.
And how did that work out?
Well, yeah, not very well. Because okay. Do you remember there was the West Coast Avengers, which was like the Californian Avengers?
Yes, I do.
So there's Avengers West Coast, and so then they came up with the Great Lakes, which is like all around the Southern Ontario.
Which
and
one
like,
was Squirrel Girl in? Again?
Yeah, that would be Great Lakes.
Great
Avengers.
Lakes.
Yeah, yeah,
oh,
yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, you know what? I know that's going to be selling through the roof
today,
and it's not just that it will be selling, and I'm sure it will. It's actually at our shop. There's fan anticipation for the book
about Squirrel Girl.
No.
Oh.
About Avengers number one.
Oh, right. Okay,
and
sorry.
They're pretty excited about it, so I'm sure people are setting their alarms extra early.
Absolutely.
So they can get to the shop.
But for those of you that are interested in Squirrel Girl comics, you can always check out Great Lakes Avengers.
Excellent.
Yes.
Excellent. Dark Tower, the Gunslinger number one, Marvel is releasing today as well. Now, I know Gunslinger Born was that first thing, and then there was
sort of a prologue kind of thing. Yeah,
yeah. Three or four other ones,
yeah.
And then they went to other Stephen King stuff that wasn't like the Captain Trips, The Stand.
Right.
And so I'm not sure which kind of episode of Dark Tower this is, whether it's the sixth or seventh or fifth or whatever, but the Stephen King stuff Marvel seems to be going back to the well for.
You know, I'm not entirely too sure how that fits in as well, but the only thing I do know is that the fan base around the Stephen King comics is enormous, and it's done great for Marvel, and I think it's done great for comics in general.
Yeah, you're right. I remember when the first Gunslinger Born came out. That was right around the time, I don't know if you remember, Chris, where Buffy came out.
Right, yes.
And it was great because there was a double whammy of two products that were bringing in non-comic
book
people.
Brand new fan base.
Yeah, into the shop.
Yeah, yeah.
And not to stereotype, but Buffy was more like women getting women in because they were more predominantly Buffy fans.
Yep.
And the Dark Tower was like, you know, Stephen King book fans.
Right.
They were coming in, you know. Like they were kind of looking around like, do I belong here? Should I be in here?
Well, probably don't because they actually read, you know, literature.
Books. Well, hey, listen, comics are literature.
And I kid, right, of course.
Right. Yes. So Stephen King fans, Dark Tower fans rejoice today.
Absolutely.
Gunslinger number one hits the stands. And I know Chris Owen will be rejoicing today.
Oh, really?
Zatanna number one hitting
the stands.
Sweet.
You know, one of my favorite DC characters is Zatanna. You know, I got to say that anytime I see a character in fishnets and a top hat, I got nothing.
Right.
I got
heels.
Yeah, and high heels and a little tuxedo kind of thing. Yeah.
Paul Dini's writing it.
Oh, even better. You know, I love Paul Dini's writing. He was one of the driving forces behind the Batman animated series and the adventures. And, of course, he wrote the Batman Harley Quinn Mad Love, graphic novel, which has often been touted as one of the best comics ever written. Even John Byrne. John Byrne was a great Canadian comic artist who
wrote. Isn't John Byrne crazy?
I don't know about that.
Okay,
but John Byrne also was one of the driving forces behind the X-Men and Fantastic Four for many years, and he said it was one of the best comics he's ever read. I should say.
Wow, yeah. Zatanna. Now, the problem with Zatanna, unfortunately, with the way comics are, Chris, as you know, is Zatanna's got her work cut out for her.
Yes,
she's not an A-list character.
No,
it's so it's gonna have to, Paul Dini's gonna have to come up with some magical stuff to get a core following. For
magical
this
stuff, you magical know, stuff. She is a magical character. So was that sort of a play on words you did there?
I hadn't a clue.
Oh well, okay. Well, of course, for those of you who don't know who Zatanna is this character that goes around dressed up, basically like a magician, but with fishnets instead of regular pants, and she says, in order to make her magic work, she says everything backwards, right?
Like that's a Mitzelplicknick?
Kinda, yeah. Oh. Yeah, kinda.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's interesting, and I'm sure, I'll set the one copy aside we put.
Would you mind?
Yeah,
I'll set it aside. I'd appreciate that.
Speaking of one copy aside, Legion of Superheroes number one.
Oh.
It stands today from DC as well.
Yes.
Now, this is, I'm not sure, but probably the seventh Legion of Superheroes title DC's launching.
At least, yeah. You know what? The Legion series has undergone so many different incarnations over the years that this has got to be at least the seventh different incarnation.
Yeah.
They keep on going back to the well, and every once in a while they'll hit a stride for a while, but they can't seem to keep it going.
Well, what's happening here? Are Marvel and DC, because Marvel and DC are repeating themselves, and we're only mentioning the two big guys here, but they're repeating themselves with these failed franchises.
Yes.
But obviously there's a reason why to keep the stable of characters going? Is it because actually number ones and number twos sell?
Well,
and then
know,
after issue 10, they
you know, for any of our fans who are listening, they will remember that there was a time when the Legion of Superheroes was a big comic in like the late 70s and the
yes,
early 80s.
Yes.
And that's, of course, where we had Superboy was part of the Legion of Superheroes.
Yep.
And then later on we had, well, I shouldn't say later on, but of course, part of that canon of characters was like Saturn Girl, and
Cosmic Boy.
All those kind of characters. So they've been around for a long, long time, but they've never really made it to the big time because they have had some great incarnations, but it's not something that they keep on going with.
Well, what I will say about Legion of Superheroes is they are greater than the sum of their parts in the
yes.
sense that who cares about Saturn Girl,
sure,
or Cosmic Boy,
right?
But,
right.
But the
Lightning
Legion,
Lad,
yeah, the Legion of Superheroes is a cool
that's
concept,
cool,
right?
Right, right.
And unfortunately, or maybe fortunately, DC has to throw Superboy into the mix to power it up a bit.
For sure.
But that whole premise of the 31st century superhero team from all over the universe and stuff is great.
It's a great
and
idea.
It's got a
yeah.
great core following.
It really does. It really does. And, maybe they'll, I don't want to say get it right because they've gotten it right in the past, but
mm-hmm.
it's a comic where people don't really know the characters very well. You know what? Maybe the Legion needs a movie. Legion
yeah.
needs a Legion of Superheroes movie or a cartoon series or something to get everybody involved in that.
Cue it up.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, Chris, there's one that you and I both love. And this is one of those things where I'm glad it's being reprinted. It's
okay.
The Liberty Meadows trade paperback, volume one, Eden.
Oh, very good.
Frank Cho,
yeah,
Liberty Meadows.
Yeah, fantastic.
And the thing is, that book was so good and so funny and so
yeah.
entertaining.
Yeah.
But time kind of caught up with it, and a decade has gone by, and people have kind of forgotten
yeah,
about it.
Yeah, yeah.
And even though we try to upsell it at the store saying, you're going to enjoy this.
It really is
enjoy
great.
This.
Yeah.
I'm really glad about this relaunch, this new printing, this publicity that it's getting.
Yeah.
As a new this week graphic novel, because that is tremendous.
Well,
stuff.
You know what? I am of mixed opinions of this. One, I love the fact that they're reprinting it as a graphic novel, because really there are a lot of Liberty Meadows fans out there who are going to enjoy this, and people who don't even know about Liberty Meadows will enjoy this. It's a great series. Liberty Meadows, for those of you who aren't familiar, started out as a sort of daily comic book strip. And it was like in strip form, so you had the four panels, just like a regular kind of, you know, everyday cartoon series. Now, then, of course, Frank Cho, who's the artist and writer behind Liberty Meadows, of course, was snapped up by Marvel and has been doing all kinds of work for Marvel over the past few years. But you know what? And this is the thing that I digress, because I'm disappointed in Frank Cho, because he's really let Liberty Meadows slide.
He
hasn't published anything from Liberty Meadows for a long time, and he's let all of his fan base let go. People who followed him for years because of that particular book have now been let down because he's opted to go and draw the Avengers
And then basically, though, he's become a glorified cover artist.
Absolutely.
I love Frank Cho's work.
Sure.
But he can't bring a book a monthly on delivery on time, like on deadline, because he takes a long time for his art and stuff.
That's right.
And so he's not a good interior artist in the sense of getting a book to market every month.
He's extremely slow.
Yeah, he's a great artist.
Don't get me wrong. Absolutely.
I'd love him to, you know, be drawing seven titles a month and get it done.
Absolutely.
The point is, he can't.
No.
So he ended up just drawing titles. And he's a man of great creativity, and I think he got lost a little bit with those titles.
You know what? He really is a man of great creativity, and, you know, and I got to tell you, as a guy that, you know, I've collected many comics just for the covers over the years because of sultry, seductive kind of good-looking covers or whatever. Mm-hmm. And here's a guy that, unfortunately, he's really been typecast into drawing these buxom babes.
Good girl art kind of stuff.
And sadly, the rest of his art is being overshadowed because he's not doing enough of the regular kind
of
stuff.
And that's where Liberty Meadows, if you look at those strips, those panels, the animals, it's right up there, you know, in quality with Bloom County.
Oh, absolutely.
Right up there in quality
sure.
with Calvin and Hobbes and stuff.
Yep.
And the timing, it's really hard to write a four-panel strip.
Oh, sure.
And his comic timing was great.
It was very good.
And I encourage everybody to check out Liberty Meadows.
Yeah, very extremely talented artist.
Okay. Chris, we're going to segue into industry news.
Okay.
Anyway, because the show is moving along.
We've aren't almost halfway through. We haven't even talked about industry news yet. Okay.
Okay. First, I want to talk about DC quickly. DC Comics is closing down its CMX manga.
Oh, is it
unit.
Really?
Yes,
okay.
It is.
Okay.
Manga has been on the wane in North America a bit. Publishers like Viz and Tokyo Pop have been feeling the pinch in terms of sales. DC had its own manga imprint, CMX, and as of July 1st, it is no longer.
Well, you know, it seemed, if I remember correctly, DC never really had a lot of the bigger titles in manga.
Yeah,
it had some of the smaller ones. It did very well, but it didn't have the Ron Mahaff. It didn't have the Avatar.
Yep.
You know, a lot of the
Naruto.
All that kind of stuff.
Yeah, right. You're right. Bleach. And it's one of those things where DC was smart enough, to, I think, to catch the wave of the popularity of manga years ago.
Yeah.
But because they were marginal to begin with, as soon as that genre is feeling
it slides a little bit, they're going to hit it right away.
Also, in industry news, is Wizard World. Remember, you and I are heading down to New York in October.
Yes.
The big Reed comic show. October 8th to 10th.
Something like
and
that.
And there was a big thing about Wizard World having the show the same weekend.
Right, right. Okay. And then it was moved.
Yeah, it was official. It wasn't moved.
Oh.
And then today, or this week, it was officially moved to a week before in New York City.
I thought, now, wasn't it moved and then moved back or
moved
something?
Moved back,
yeah,
right.
Yeah, okay.
And now he's basically, he's the first one that blinked.
Right,
And he's moved it back now a week before. So I think for me and you, it means just like, you know, 12 days in a hotel.
That sounds scary already.
Yeah, I didn't mean it. Sounded.
You know what? For those of you who don't want me to go to New York, please email me at chris.owen@mohawkcollege.ca or mailbox@bigbcomics.com.
Right.
But please save me.
Save me.
From 12 days in a hotel with Walter. No, you know what? I have to say that anytime I've ever traveled with Walt, it's been a great time. So
excellent, Chris. Thanks for that. Iron Man 2, Chris. Iron Man 2 repeats as the biggest
number one
of the week. weekend. And it took a massive hit from the week before.
Well, yeah.
But it still made something like $500 trillion. What is it? $53 million.
Yeah, you know what? I finally saw it.
Oh, did you?
On Sunday, yeah. I finally saw it. I thought it was fantastic. I really enjoyed it. And, you know, I know some of my friends, some of my cronies didn't enjoy it as much as I did, but I thought it was great. I really enjoyed it. And so now I finally saw that Easter egg, that last little bit there behind the credits.
We can talk about that now. Yeah, we couldn't talk about it before because I was protecting you.
Yes, well, I appreciate that. So now, hold on a second. Those of you who are listening right now, if you don't want to know what happens after the credits, turn the radio down just for a brief minute here. We're going to talk very quickly about what happens. And of course, what did happen was we saw Thor's hammer.
It was like an archaeological dig.
And we saw Thor's hammer. Now, having said all that, although I was extremely excited to see Thor's hammer, I have to say that I was a little disappointed.
Why?
Because, first of all, as a comic book nerd, why does Thor not have his hammer? Right?
Because maybe he misplaced it.
Thor does not misplace his hammer here, right? So why did Thor not have his hammer? So however, of course, being the nerd that I am, I have to come up with theories behind this. Well, maybe he was trapped by Loki or Odin or something. Right. Maybe he's in peril and needs the rest of the Avengers to help him out, and that's why they found Thor's hammer. Right? So who knows what's going on there, right?
Right.
But I would have to say that I was a little disappointed because, you know what? In the first Iron Man movie, we got to see Nick Fury. Mm-hmm. In the Incredible Hulk movie, we got to see Nick Fury and Iron Man in Incredible Hulk. So in the second Iron Man movie, I was kind of hoping that we might see a new character or some sort of new type development. And all we really got was a hammer.
Yeah.
It was like this like giant letdown for me.
Don't hurt him, Hammer.
I know. Can't touch this.
Well, I haven't seen the movie yet, but I have been told about the Hammer.
When was the last movie you saw, anyway? Just curious.
I think...
1978?
No. You know which one it was? It was Up or something like that. The one that took the kids to.
Oh, well, did you really?
Pixar one. I digress. I saw Avatar and I loved it.
Oh, did you really? Yeah. You saw Avatar?
I saw Avatar in 3D. It was excellent.
Okay, fair enough.
But it's not a comic, so we won't talk about
it. No, we won't. Okay.
Chris, an end of an era. Unfortunate, but they have pulled the plug on Little Orphan Annie.
Oh, you're kidding.
After 86 years, an 86-year
86
run.
86 years. Yeah.
Harold Gray's
cow.
Creation started in 1924. It was one of the most syndicated strips in newspapers. It ended with a whimper. I think there was like 20 or 25 newspapers that were carrying it
at the end
of the day. But... it was just one of those victims of the times, and it's I'm sure that franchise or that character will be around forever. But it's just I guess the people that were producing the daily strips, just weren't getting anything out of it.
But you know what? It was a comic of its time. I mean, really. How do you even relate to a character like Little Orphan Annie anymore? Yeah. I mean, it's so dated, unfortunately. The whole idea of an orphanage, they don't even have orphanages in that sense anymore, right?
Now, I know you were a fan of one of the offshoots of it, Little Oral Annie. I think you're a big fan. But that was like
an offshoot. I think that was in a different magazine.
Right. Yeah. Is that in Playboy?
Penthouse, actually.
Penthouse? Yeah, okay. Yeah. See, I knew you'd know that.
maybe it was Playboy. I don't remember. Okay. Yikes. Harvey Kurtzman. Harvey Kurtzman, by the way, was also the Mad Magazine artist. So I was strictly for
the articles
and entertainment purposes.
Yeah, of course. The good news is IDW will be doing a series of reprints
of Little Orphan Annie.
Orphan Annie. Yes. Orphan. I think Bob Guccione will be doing the. reprints of the little...
Right, right.
Okay, Chris, we've got to move this show along.
Okay.
We're running out of time.
Okay, hold on. You know what? We haven't even talked about that whole century thing yet.
Oh, right, yeah.
I got to bring that up. I know it should have been part of the first section of the show.
You're right.
Because we're talking about the century issue.
Yeah, a century has been killed off by Marvel.
The century character has been killed off by Marvel. Now, the century...
Thank God, first of all.
Well, yeah, you know what? I totally agree.
That character, like, I'm not sure, you know, it sucks.
You know what? When the idea first came out, Paul Jenkins wrote it, and it was supposed to be a kind of a bit of a joke saying that, you know, this is a character that Stan Lee created back in the day, but never got any play to it,
uh-huh.
You know, and it was supposed to be, like, here's his backstory kind of thing, when it was all never really happened.
Right.
It was just a brand new character. Now, the Century character was like this Superman-type character who got his powers from the sun and all that kind of stuff. And now he dies, and now we're finding out that, in fact, he actually had a relationship with this character, Rogue. Now, of course...
From the X-Men.
Now,
hold on. Who played Rogue in the X-Men movies?
Anna Paquin. Yes.
Okay. Who played... who was Halle Berry?
Storm.
Storm. Okay, I got them mixed up.
Okay,
keep going.
So, all right, thank you. So now, of course, with Rogue was one of these characters that anybody she touched, she got their powers or she took their life essence, like that kind of thing. Like she's never able to touch anybody, right?
Right.
And she had this long standing relationship with Gambit,
mm-hmm.
Remy LeBeau, who was a love interest there, was never able to touch.
Just how Remy LeBeau. Kind of rhymes off like Pepe Le Pew.
Kind of, yeah, okay. Yeah. Kind of, it was Sorry. Never able to. You know, they were never able to kiss. The first mm-hmm. time she ever kissed anybody, you know, she took those powers, and it never really, you know, she was always struggling with that whole issue of never being able to touch anything, and that was part of her whole being, right?
Essence,
there was whole essence,
the conflict
and
of the character.
You can even talk about the fact that you know, sex with in comics and sex with her was wrong, and so therefore, you know, teenage slash early 20s mm-hmm. sex was wrong. You know? And now we're finding out that in this one comic that apparently the Sentry was the only character that she was able to touch and had relations with.
But from what I read, it's like all a throwaway. It's all after the fact. It's all like, it's not even in a Rogue book. It's not even in a flipping Sentry book.
No.
It's like an eulogy type of thing, and they're throwing away this tidbit at you.
It's a eulogy to the Sentry, and all of a sudden she's saying, oh, he was the only one I was ever able to touch. And you're like, well, what?
Exactly.
Like, where did this come from?
Yeah.
You know, and of course, they got some characters like Cyclops is saying, did they just talk about what we're talking about here? And,
right.
And we're like, well, wait a second. Where did this all come from?
This completely cheapens
the character.
This is the thing that I like, is the fact that fans of X-Men and fans of comics in general are appalled by this.
Absolutely.
It's sensationalism, it's cheap exploitationism, of something that really, you know, shouldn't have happened and didn't happen, and it's like a quick buck type of thing.
Yes.
And people are mad, and it's great. It's great to see that.
Absolutely, and you know what? And there's also a panel where the Thing is talking about how the Sentry had helped to save or did something with some kids in a bus or something. I don't really remember exactly what it was, and it's sort of like, wait a second, you're telling me that, like, you know, 30 kids on a bus died in a comic book and we didn't even read about it? Like,
right.
It
was, again, like an afterthought.
Oh, by the way,
the guy that killed 30 kids in a bus,
and you're like,
you know, I took care of him.
And you're like, what? Where did this come from? Why did I have to hear that?
Yeah, exactly.
It adds nothing. It cheapens the storytelling abilities. I think that Paul Jenkins...
But hold on. Yeah, go ahead.
I was going to say, I think Paul Jenkins is a better writer than what this creator has become.
Right, I thought Jenkins was moving Marvel into the heroic age, and it's not the, you know,
cheap thrill age. Absolutely,
right.
This is it's ridiculous, and I think the fact that anybody who's a Rogue fan out there mm-hmm. will completely be upset by this because they won't know the character.
Chris, I just wish you'd get off the fence on this issue and pick a side. You know?
I think it's absolutely ridiculous.
All right, okay.
All right.
Fair enough.
Sorry, I didn't mean to get a diatribe there.
At least you didn't have a nerdgasm like you did a couple of weeks ago.
Well, no, you never know when that can rear its ugly head again.
All right. Hey, I'm going to review from Diamond Comics, April's graphic novel figures. And Kick-Ass was the number one selling graphic novel in April.
Get out of town.
Which makes sense because the Kick-Ass movie released.
Fair enough, yeah.
And then followed by Batman and Robin deluxe hardcover of the volume one, Batman Reborn. That's the Grant Morrison thing.
Yep.
That is a popular title. I can see that hitting.
Yes, absolutely. Although, you know, I'm still undecided about the whole Grant Morrison thing. You know, I thought it was great many years ago, but I find his writing today just seems to be a little convoluted. And, you know, sometimes I have to read it like four times till I understand what's going on. Yeah.
And four times reading a comic to understand it is way too many times.
I got other comics I got to read.
Right.
Right.
Like, four times.
Like Power Girl.
Or Zatanna.
Or Zatanna.
Number one. Flash Rebirth, the hardcover, came in third, which is great.
Yeah.
You know what I like? I like number four. This is from, of course, Diamond Comic Distributors. Is BPRD, War on Frogs.
Oh, very cool.
And I love it that BPRD is mixing it up there with the big Marvel boys and the DC boys.
Absolutely.
And it's not even Hellboy.
No, it's the whole canon that's surrounding Hellboy, right?
Like
it's Mike Mignola was able to create this whole this whole I don't know what you want to call it.
Paranormal
investigation kind of livelihood, whatever you want to call it. And it's surrounding Hellboy, and it doesn't even contain Hellboy anymore. And I think it's great that they're jumping in there with the big boys.
Excellent. Number five was Ultimate Comics Wolverine versus Hulk, which was that thing. You remember that a couple years ago where he rips the Hulk Wolverine apart in half.
Yeah.
And I'm going to cap it off with Crossed. I want to ask you about Crossed. Crossed is that, I think, Garth Ennis... that really kind of graphic novel where there's it's just basically the worst of the worst. It shows, like, you know, these kind of monsters or zombies or whatever ripping people apart,
extremely graphic. I mean, but it's typical Garth Ennis kind of stuff. You know, it's all about zombies
I'm not a fan of censorship.
No.
Okay. But I am kind of in tune to guys that are just kind of putting out schlock. What I think is schlock just to shock and to sell.
Okay.
I don't know. I don't know if I like that.
I'm not sure if I like Crossed. Yeah. You know, Garth Ennis is certainly no stranger to shock comics.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly the work that he did in Preacher for many, many years. It was shocking, and he certainly overstepped a lot of boundaries.
Yes.
And but you know what? You got to give him credit. He brought the characters like the Punisher back to life, mm-hmm. whereas other writers were not able to do it because he stepped over those boundaries for characters like the Punisher.
Right, and you're right. And you know what? And to his credit, I mean, he is the number six selling graphic novel to something that you know, a year ago people never heard about.
That's right. Right?
All right, Chris. Boy, the time flies. The time flies.
Okay.
We've got a few minutes left to talk about Fan Expo in Toronto in August announcing their guest list.
Yes.
Boy, Chris, what a guest list.
Hurry up. Come on. Let's go.
Adam West is going to be in town.
Adam West. And unbelievable.
William Shatner. Bill Shatner, the next Governor General of Canada.
Okay, so we got Batman and Captain Kirk so far.
Batman and Captain Kirk.
Yeah.
Felicia Day of the Guild will be in town. I've never watched the Guild, but apparently she's very pretty.
Okay, I believe you.
I think that helps.
I haven't seen it either.
You top it off with Stan the Man Lee.
Oh! You know what? Stan the Man, I mean, really the co-creator of half the Marvel Universe, right, is what it comes
down to.
According
to him, 90% of the
Marvel Universe. Well, you know, I want to say co-creator because you know, he wasn't really the creator of everything. He wasn't the sole creator. Jack Kirby, Steve Ditko, all those, John Buscema, all those kind of guys. Right?
You're right. So, and you know what? Though Stan is still the man.
Absolutely.
And he will be there.
Yep.
Now, international guest of our honor, Gary Frank.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know who Gary Frank is.
Gary Frank, yeah. He's been around a long time. He did work, I know he did work on Gen 13 and Midnight Nation and Supreme Power. He did a lot of work on the Image Comics. He's been around for a long, long time. Gary Frank is a big artist. I guess, is he British? I think he is.
I think he's okay. Oh, that's good.
Very good.
I do. And then I'm just going to quickly rhyme him off. Brian Azzarello. Ian Churchill, Darwin Cook, Dale Keown, Jeff Lemire, Francis Manapul, Steve McNiven, John Romita Jr. This is a star-studded cast.
Great show. Great
characters for this show coming up.
So, characters. How about real-life people?
What did I say?
You said characters.
Okay.
They're not characters. They actually really exist.
A couple of them are characters.
Well, I'm sure they are. All right. But anyways, you know what? Unfortunately, we've run out of time. Listen, if you really enjoy the show, please write to us and email us at chris.owen@mohawkcollege.ca or mailbox@bigbcomics.com. Go out and support your local comic book retailer and have yourself a wonderful, fantastic, fabulous day.
See everybody next week.